Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is Sex, Lies, and Spray Tans with me, Cheryl Burke, an iHeartRadio podcast. Welcome back to Sex, Lies, and Spray Tans, where the glitter of the ballroom meets the real stories behind the steps. That's like poetry. Today, we have a special guest whose electric violin strings have danced across stages worldwide, intertwining classical music with modern dubstep, rock, and electronica. She captured hearts not just with her music, but with her impressive footwork on season 25 of Dancing with the Stars, where she twirled her way into the finals. Beyond her violin, she's a powerhouse performer and a YouTube sensation, inspiring millions with her dynamic performances and imaginative visuals. What I love most about our next guest is not only is she obviously multi-talented, but she doesn't shy away from courageously telling her story behind all of the fame, glitz, and glamour. Please welcome the lovely Lindsay Sterling to the podcast. Lindsay, I haven't seen you in how long?
Gosh, I mean, I've had to have seen you at one of the Dancing with the Stars tapings for like 2 seconds to give you a hug.
Yeah, for sure.
Like maybe 2 years ago, but I haven't like really talked to you since 2017.
I mean, welcome to Sex, Lies, and Spray Tans. And this is why I love this podcast. Cause like, even when you were on the show, we still don't have an hour just to chat, right? Like, or however long we're going to chat for. Like, it really has made me just, first of all, reminisce, go down memory lane, but also really get to know everyone like on another level. So I'm so excited for this. And thank you again for doing it.
Absolutely.
So we're just going to get right into it, Lindsay. Who is Lindsay behind the dancing violinist?
Oh, man. You know, sometimes you forget. You're like, oh, yeah, I am a real person behind like this persona that I, you know, spend so much of my time investing in, whether it's the talent part of it or the like practicing or the imagination or the all the different things, you know, how you present yourself on social media. So it is a funny question when it's like, oh, right, what am I? And, you know, I really think that my artistry is very much so just an exaggerated version of myself. Like, I've tried to portray that through social media, that I'm just kind of like a quirky, dorky, slightly goofy, you know, gal that also loves, like, fantasy and, like, a little bit extra over-the-top whimsicality. Like, that's what I am in my imagination. But in real life, I'm just this kind of, like, we're just barely holding the pieces together with duct tape kind of a human.
Totally. I feel you. Just taking it second by second.
Literally, yeah.
How old were you when you started to play the violin?
Gosh, I was 6 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, just a little wee thing. But I will say I did ask for lessons. Like, it was my idea. I begged my parents. And they, you know, for some reason at 6 years old, I was really into the violin.
What made you, like, was there someone that you, like a mentor that, or someone you looked up to in that world that inspired you?
You know, my parents loved classical music. Like, they had this old record player and they would play, like, you know, it was either the Beatles was like the closest thing we had to like contemporary music. My dad loved the Beatles, or it was like the Scheherazade suite or like, you know, Paganini. Like, they just loved orchestra music. And so, you know, and like, I remember going to some of the like communities orchestra concerts that were like free. And like my parents, I think, were like, oh, this is free entertainment for the family. And so we would go to those. And so, yeah, I just always noticed that the violins, they get all the fast notes, they get all the solos. I was like, that's the star. And so that's why I wanted to play.
And how is your dynamic as a family? Do you have any siblings?
I do. I'm actually one of five. And so pretty, you know, good sized family. And, but most actually growing up, I was the middle of three. My parents adopted two kids when I was 18. And so then I became one of five. But yeah, so I kind of, I resonate with the middle child of, you know, the middle child syndrome. but I think that's a big reason as to why I am the way I am. Because not that my parents didn't give me love and attention, adoration, but just middle children kind of get lost in the, you know, in the scuffle of things. But
right.
But yeah, no, we grew up like on a, you know, kind of out in what we called the country. Like we had chickens and horses, you know, we had a horse. I would help my neighbors milk their cow. Like I grew up a little country bumpkin. Yeah, for sure. Which I think it's like a great work ethic. And I don't know. There's just I think a bunch of my free spiritness comes from the fact that I could run around barefoot in like cornfields. Oh. And like, I was like a little wild child.
I love that. Yeah, I know. No, I am definitely the opposite the way I. Yeah. I can't even dance barefoot, let alone run around in cornfields barefoot.
Oh, and in Arizona, it's so hot that like the roads get scalding. But like, I don't know, the thought of putting on shoes when you're like, I could just sprint across the street to get to my friend's house barefoot. So like, I don't know, I had like leather soles on my feet. I was like a little wild child.
Where do you get that work ethic from? Who in your family was very like focused and determined?
You know, I think part of it came from the fact that, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, my family did well. We were fine. But like in the American scheme of things, we were like, we didn't have a lot. And so if I wanted something from a very young age, I knew that I had to figure out a way to earn the money for it myself. And it couldn't come from mom and dad. Like they couldn't afford to pay me to do the extra chores that I wanted to do. And so I remember when I was like, I think like 10 years old, me and my friend across the street decided we would hand out business cards through the neighborhood to like give our services to paint your fence or like wash your dog or like whatever. And I tell you, we also weren't smart enough to like put a price on it. It was like, you pay us whatever you think is fair. And tell you the amount of work we did for like pennies, but we worked really hard to like buy that. Like if I wanted more than $100 for like my back to school shopping, everything, like I had to earn it myself. You know, so I think that work ethic came from one, my parents just instilling us like, we can do this, we can figure it out. They gave us ideas. They helped us implement the ideas. I'm really grateful for that situation because it taught me like that if it's not there for you, you make it happen. You figure it out.
How did America's Got Talent come about?
It came about, way back in the day. I'm talking 2007. I put a video on YouTube, like, and I didn't understand what YouTube was yet. No one really did. No. I put a video on YouTube and it went quote unquote viral for the time. Mm-hmm. And, it got circulated around enough. And America's Got Talent has talent scouts that like will reach out and like contact people if they think that, hey, this is interesting. And they'll like kind of recruit you almost to go and do the audition. And several years after I posted this video, it accumulated enough views that America's Got Talent reached out. And I went I remember first calling my mom and being like, Mom, like, can I do this? I'm terrified, like affording a plane ticket to LA, you know, like it was just a lot for like, I was paying my way through college and, I'd have to take off work. And I remember my mom just being like, yeah, you should do it. And I'm going to meet you there. And so my mom drove and picked me up from the airport. She drove from Arizona. I flew in from Utah and she picked me up from the airport. She like went to the audition with me, you know, sat outside the room, like while I auditioned. Like my mom has been, both my parents were incredibly supportive, like more than I could ever like hope for. I just sometimes don't understand also how scary that would be as a parent, knowing that your daughter's heart probably is going to be broken in this moment. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's probably like the likelihood of success is so low in our industry, and especially going on like a TV show like that, it's like chances are she's going to get ripped apart. But just, I'm so grateful that my mom and my parents were like, yeah, definitely. You don't want to wonder what would have happened. Like, we have to go. And so, yeah, that was kind of the beginning of a a trail of events, you know, even though that didn't go as I hoped it would, it was a catalyst for sure in many
for
ways.
For sure. And thank God in a way, like, first of all, they were so rude. The judges were so rude. I love that you use their voices in your, is it your last music video that you released or was it? It is brilliant. Like, it gave me chill. I was crying.
Oh, thank you.
It's so beautiful. It was so beautiful. And I just love that, you know, you're not trying to numb that part of your life because it is such a huge, I would say, turning point. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but.
Yeah. I mean, it was in all the ways that I didn't expect it to be. Like, I mm-hmm. thought this would be my make or break in terms of, like, suddenly the world would see me for my talent and what I am. And it would, like, explode my, you know, my scope across the world. And I just thought it would be changing in that way. But in a more profound way, it impacted me because it taught me, like, hey, in this industry, you're going to get pushed down. You're not everybody's going to believe in you. And you're going to have to be strong enough to pick yourself back up. And are you strong enough to do that? And the amount of times I've had to do that since, I mean, you know, it happens all the time that people don't believe in you or you feel like you're a joke or whatever, you know, I don't fit in the industry or whatever. And the amount of times I've, like, looked back on that experience subconsciously, even just being like, well, that, you know, I got it from that. I get it from this. I don't have to believe what everybody says about me. And one person's opinion isn't everything, but also growth. Like, back when I was on America's Got Talent, like, the whole point of that music video wasn't to prove, like, I showed you guys and, like, screw you. You were so wrong about me. It was more to prove that, like, one moment of your life, like, where you are today doesn't determine who you're going to be later. It's all about what you're willing to put in. And I wasn't ready yet. I really didn't do well on America's Got Talent. But I decided that, like, I'm just not good enough. And I added the word yet. To what they said.
Exactly.
You know, I can get there. I can work hard. And I had this really distinctive, like, moment where I, like, had this thought that just was so strong. I think of it as God, but it was like, I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up. I was so embarrassed. But this voice was just like, you are not done yet. There is more for you here. Like, do not, you know, there is more. And if I could have had a visual to what I like, the strong feeling I felt, it would have been like that music video. It would have been like seeing all that stuff, even though I didn't see any of that, but it was this very profound, like, I know that I need to keep going.
And what is that? So for any aspiring musicians or any person that wants to be a part of this entertainment world, I think what, I guess, made you not want to just throw in the gloves? Like, because it's so easy to do that as well, or just to believe in what people say, especially the outside noise. There's so much of it now with social media. Thank God there was no social media back then, I'm assuming.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, because that was when I started Dancing with the Stars, was 2006. And I was like, it was just those crazy message boards. But like, you know, thank God. But now it's so different. So how do you stay focused and stay believing in yourself, I guess?
You know, I think it's like it's a muscle you have to constantly work on. And I think whether you're like a kid in high school or whether you're, you know, a dancing violinist or, you know, like whatever, I think we all have to just continuously remind ourselves that I'm more than what that person thinks I am in this moment, you know, or I have more worth than this tiny thing that happened. You know, like, I am so much bigger than that. My life is like a much bigger scope than like every single moment or one person's opinion. And so being able to like truly look inward, and I'm a big believer that we have like multiple voices that happen inside of us. There's like our mind and there's our heart. And I think our mind is always so much louder. It's so much more chatty and it's trying to protect us. It's trying to keep us safe. It doesn't want us to take risks. Like, our mind like weighs the pros and cons and very logically is like, that's a bad idea because that hurt and that was embarrassing. You don't want to do that again. And that person says you're not enough, so you probably aren't. Like, your mind will chatter, chatter, chatter. And it's like, yeah, you'll believe it. But if you like sink a little deeper, and I'm a huge fan of like meditation and breath work and it, you know, and prayer, like all those things, they allow you to like sink a little deeper than the chatter of your mind and quiet it, which I think it's called anxiety, and go to like this place in your heart where you can actually be like, okay, no, I don't believe all these lies running through my head that are all made up stories of what I think they think of me. But like, what does my heart say? And I feel like that is the compass that will never lead you astray. That is the compass you will never regret listening to. And
you
I
can
feel
just
like
feel it. Everyone has it.
Feel it. Everybody has it. And I think the more you tap into it, the more you learn to trust it and the louder it gets.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, I am very heavy into, well, I've been really shitty at it lately, but to be quite honest, but yes, I do transcendental meditation. And ever since I've started doing that, and I've been taking a really deep dive into just self, right? Like working on myself and just super curious, right? So like whenever I sit in silence, I can't stop my thoughts from thinking, because I think when you say meditation, people are like, I just can't get my mind to stop. It's like, that's not the goal. The goal is just to sit, to have your body, just separate yourself, like you said, like the body sits still, let the thoughts go. They're like waves of the ocean, right? So it's like they come and go, ebb and flow constantly, but that doesn't define the reality of what the situation. And I think if we can start separating that and stepping back and understanding that we're the observer of our thoughts, it's a whole new world. Mind you, I know that intellectually. I just need to think that when I'm in reaction mode instead of responding, you know?
Absolutely. And again, it's just a practice of being like, I know the truer answer. I know a better way. Let's go there. Cause like automatic reactions are that takes years to change, you know, the automatic response.
Oh my God, I'm still so bad at it. But yes, definitely.
Same.
It's really about being present, right? Like you just have to be present and then understand like it's just a feeling. This too shall pass. Like it will in like a few minutes.
Yes. Honestly, that's become one of my favorite like mantras over the last year as I've ridden these like ups and downs that were pretty extreme in the last year. Realizing that, you know, and the thought kept coming to me, maybe I'm not okay right now, but I know I will be. Mm-hmm. I know this will pass. And sometimes that meant like it was going to be a few months. Sometimes it meant it was going to be like a day, two. Maybe I'm having like a little depression spell or something. Or I'm really disappointed. Yeah. That's going to take a day or two and I'll be okay. Right now I'm pretty, pretty bummed, you know? Or even the bigger things, just knowing like I've been through heartbreak. I've been through like, you know, disappointment. I've been through humiliation. And in all those moments, you feel like the world is over.
Yeah.
But then life goes on and you realize that like, it will be okay. And same with the beautiful good times. It's this amazing thought also to think that like, oh, I feel so happy and joyous. This is so great. But I know this won't last forever. So I'm really going to like relish in it for this moment as long as I have it, because it's not always going to be here. Like everything's an ebb and flow. So it's kind of a beautiful thought.
Yeah. And like time heals, like in general, right? It really does.
Absolutely.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024. And we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time. We hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver.
and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I love, Lindsay, how open you are with your mental health, and you talk openly about body dysmorphia and something that I go through still to this day. I heard your interview with Mayim Bialik, and you talked a lot about, which was an amazing interview. I know that was a couple of years ago. But can you tell my listeners what body dysmorphia is and how, and I guess what anorexia is, just for people to understand if they don't?
Yeah. I mean, it's so crazy that it's a disease that takes over your body and it's connected to your body, but it really all exists in your mind. Like, that's the wildest part about it. It's a mind disease. And it's, you know, the fact that you can, like, it's so crazy to think you can look in the mirror, and people told me so many times that what you see isn't real. And like, to be told that over and over again, but it's true that like, you're seeing this, like, this different version of yourself that your mind is creating, and it's not really what is being seen. And then I think the anorexia is just this being absolutely consumed by this control of trying to control your body and make it something else. And by being controlled by this, you stop eating, you start overexercising, the thing that's so scary about anorexia or all of these things is they happen slowly. And because they're in your mind, I don't know how your mind works. I don't know how you think. I don't know how anybody else thinks. All I know is how I think. And so it's really hard to realize you have a huge, massive problem. And I just remember opening up to my mom finally about the fact that I was like debilitatingly depressed, and I didn't care about anything anymore. And I'd become the shell of a human, and it had to happen slowly. I didn't know who I was. And like, finally one day I was talking to her about this and expressing it. And I said, and I think about food all the time. Like, all I do is think about calories and food and what to avoid. And she just said, that's not normal. And it was the first time that I really realized that like, I have a problem. And all I can say is that the amount of freedom that finally came from saying the words, like, I think I'm anorexic, like, it was like this huge weight was lifted off my shoulders, because finally, like, I know how to solve a problem. I know how to work on something that I know what it is. But you don't know how to solve something that's a mystery. And so when I finally realized I was anorexic, it was like, okay, like, this is terrifying, but I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to get help. Now that I know what the problem is. And I don't know, being able to separate myself from the disease took years of work to be like, you're not me, anorexia, you're a problem. And even still to this day, it was really funny. I was talking to a friend. I went to, like, I do sculpt yoga and I love it. And I remember one day I was just feeling particularly like, whatever we call it, bloated, or like, you know, I try not to use certain words anymore. So I'll just say I felt bloated, and I looked in the mirror and even thought like, oh, I don't look good, you know, in my little yoga outfit. 15 minutes into the class, when my body is like pumping and like my I'm sweating and I'm feeling like my body activate, I looked in the mirror and I felt fine. And it's just to show you that it's all in your brain.
It's all in your brain.
And it's almost really funny to catch it now. It's like, I can look in the mirror and be like, I know you're lying to me, because 10 minutes ago, I felt horrible about my body, and now you look great. No, I caught you in your lie. This is ridiculous. And so it's almost like a game I play with a dysfunctional relationship. And I get to just be like, you're lying to me and I know it. And I refuse to believe those thoughts anymore.
Cause we're not our thoughts.
We are not our thoughts. They come, they go, and it's up to us to determine which ones we let stay, but they're not who I am.
Yeah. You know, oh my gosh, I feel like I relate to everything you just said. Now I also heard you say, cause I am currently going through this. So like, You mentioned during the Mayim Bialik interview that you did this with sleep, in a way. Okay, I am doing this, and I've been doing this since I've been separated or divorced, right? So like, and or since I've been sober. I've been sober now for 6 years. So like, literally, it's almost, thank you. Literally, it's almost like I am, it's not self, I wouldn't say it's self-sabotage, right? Like, I don't think that's what it is. I don't know. Maybe it's my addict brain. I don't know. But like, I currently only go off of like sometimes 3 to 5, sometimes 1.5 to 5 hours.
So for me, what I realized is the same way some people are addicts to like, you know, substances.
Yeah. Yes.
Anorexia is an addictive mindset. It's just, it's an addiction to like self-depreciation and like, what is it? Like lack,
like self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage, no. But also like if I heard that the average human my size is supposed to eat 2000 calories, there was an automatic thought in my brain of like, I can survive on 1700. Wow. And then you're like, actually, I could survive on 1500, you know, and then yes. It's like, oh, actually, well, and you do that. And then you like, you get it down. So like, that's the mindset or of like, this is supposed to be the average weight. Well, then I better be like,
you want to beat the odds in a way. Is it a weird competitive thing?
It's a weird competitive, like, I don't need, like, I can overdo, I can be. And so when you hear like, oh, the average person needs 8 hours of sleep, it's like, well,
no, that's bullshit.
I can work harder if I get sleep less and yes. I can get more done. And so therefore, like if the average human needs that much, I can do better. I can work harder. Like,
well, it's also quieter. I don't have people emailing me or texting me. Like, I mean, of course I'm going to find every excuse in the book, but it's a problem.
It's a problem. And I haven't quite cracked the code yet, but I know it's connected to the same mindset.
It's control. I think it's just control, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I can do this. I can outbeat my body. My body, you know, I don't know. It's weird.
What made you want to be so open about it?
Honestly, I think it was the desire to like give people the information I didn't have, you know, and especially like, I don't know. I remember when I first entertained the thought that maybe I had an eating disorder, I was like, no, that's for crazy people. Like people that are institutionalized have eating disorders, you know? And actually I worked at a rehab center for troubled teenage girls. And like, so I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, like these girls were demanded by the state to go into these facilities. And so I was just like, no, like I am a functioning human. Like I am normal. Like that's the thing though, functioning normal humans, we all go through it. And so I just wanted to kind of like share my story so that maybe somebody who doesn't know why they're extremely depressed and they can't think about anything in life, you know, and they can't foster any relationships or anything. Maybe it's because your mind is completely consumed and taken up by the fact that it's trying to control, you know, your body and that your neurons don't have enough nutrition to fire properly. You know, so it's like, I don't know. I just was like, maybe I wish I'd heard this from someone else.
Did you go to therapy or is this all like you just really being so in tune with your body?
Oh, I went to therapy for sure. I went to like an individual therapist. I was in college. I found a group, like this like secret group for like anorexic girls that could meet. So I did like group therapy through the college. I went to a nutritionist to learn how to like put meals together that would actually sustain my body. And then on top of that, the most helpful thing aside from all that was reading lots of books. I like studied it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think, knowledge is power in that sense. Did Dancing with the Stars bring up any of anything for you as far as like, you know, eating disorders or anything like that?
No, not at all, actually, because I was working out so much that it didn't have a chance to, like, I actually accidentally lost weight. And I remember being really kind of like frustrated or upset that I had, you know, my fans, I've been very open about my past, but because, you know, you get so thin on that show when, you know, you're not used to dancing and working out like that. And so I lost a decent amount of weight. And I remember fans and people talking about, like, I think she's sick again. And it really upset me that, I don't know. I just don't think it's ever appropriate to comment on anybody else's body.
Never.
And everybody knows that fat shaming is bad. But it's really bad to also talk about anybody's body in any way, shape, or form, and especially to tie it up to somebody's mental health and brain. And like, I don't know, I know it came from a good place. People were like, we're just worried about you. But, you know, anyways, I just remember being really hurt by that after all the work I'd done to be like, because I'm losing. Anyways, you know, I just have realized that I'm never, for good or worse, I actually don't like to even give compliments to people about their bodies. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think, like, even if, you know,
because you don't know what that person's going through. Like, what if you say, you look fabulous. And what if I've been starving myself for the past freaking weeks?
Yeah. Or like someone's like sick and you're like, you know, or they're so depressed that they haven't been eating and they're like, you look amazing.
Or you have some weight, like, good on you. Like,
good for you. Yeah.
I've always felt like that.
Ever comment on anybody's body. And I never really thought about it until I read this amazing book called More Than a Body. Everybody should read this book. It is superb. And, you know, and they talk about the body as an instrument rather than an ornament. And they go so deep into it that you realize how deep the psychological wiring in our brain is from society. And we all know this, but
the way we were raised. Yeah.
Everything. This book is so good. More Than a Body. And it just, ever since I read that book, I've never commented on somebody's body
that
again.
That is actually, I'm gonna start doing that too, because like I'm not even present when I'm like, oh my god, you look great. Like, we just don't know, because I remember when I was being complimented, I was definitely not healthy,
right?
There was no way.
And it was like the best compliment when someone would be like, oh my gosh, you're so thin. I'd be like, thank you.
Like, I'll just continue to starve. Like, what the hell?
Starving. Like, I've been eating carrots for like the last week. It's fine.
Have you read the book Body Keeps the Score?
Yes, I have read that book. That's a great book too. I love all those books that tie the mind to the body. Like, you know, that it's, one, it's Life so... Without Ed was changing for me, you know.
Okay, you're going to have to text me all these books, because I haven't heard of the last two you mentioned. So I need some new reading material.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024. And we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time. We hope. I have some big news to share with you on our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dancing with the Stars. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. How did your initial meeting go with the executives? Like, were you a fan of the show?
Yes. I had actually performed on it, I think, twice before.
Yeah.
So I had come in as a guest and I performed.
When we had result shows.
Yes. And so I remember I had told my management, my publicist, I was like, I want to do this someday. And so I remember, meeting Dina and introducing myself and trying to do all the things of please bring me back. Cause I mean, it's just crazy. I remember being in college and watching one of the very early seasons when Julianne Hough and Antonio, it was the speed skater guy.
Apollo Antonono.
Apollo. Yeah.
That was season five or something.
Yeah, I remember watching their season. That was the first one I saw. And I just was like, this would be so cool. But at the time, I was just a college student. So I was like, well, I'm not a dancer and I'm definitely not a star. So I would never be on this show. But how fun. That looks so fun. And so years later to be asked then by Dina, and the team to be on the show, I was just so excited. And I remember in my meeting with them, they said, these are the dates. And I was like, oh, I'm going on tour. There's a huge overlap. And I was like, but it's okay. I'll do it anyway. And they literally looked at me and they were like, I don't think you understand. This is so hard.
So they said that to you. They said that it's hard. It's consuming.
They did. They almost they're like, is there any way you can change your tour dates? And I was like, no, they're already up. They're already tickets are sold. And then I point blank asked them, I was like, well, could you bring me back next year? And they were very honest. We never know. What's going to be the thing and what role will be filled by what personality. So they're very honest that we'll definitely consider, but we don't know. And so I decided to do it anyway. And it was so tiring.
I'm sure that's an understatement.
It's funny because Mark tells me still to this day that my season, he's never been more tired because we were flying back and forth and touring. And he was also opening for me on tour. So he was performing every night as well. And I was doing meet and greets every day, on tour. But I think the hardest part was learning the tour. So I was going to Dancing with the Stars rehearsals all day. And then in the evenings, I would go and learn choreography with my dancers show. So I was like, it was a brand new show. I'd never done a Christmas tour before. And so I was doing double rehearsals. And then when we went on tour, just the exhaustion of being sleeping on a bus performing, we cut the tour down. We only did four shows a week because then we also had to come back for anyways. So it was a lot.
So the choreography changed every night on tour or no? It was just learning a new show, basically.
Yeah, I was just learning the new show. So once we got on tour, at least it was I just have to do this every night. But learning it was so hard overlapping schedules. And I remember but at the same time, it was so Dancing with the Stars was so fun. But at the same time, it was so freaking stressful and I was so tired. So I remember when we finished our last dance, I literally started crying because one, I was like, this was so magical. And I will never get to experience anything like that again. And it was so cool and such a dream come true. I'd always wanted to actually learn to dance. But also I cried because I was like, I did it. And I didn't make a fool of myself. I never disappointed my partner. I never fell on my face. I never blanked on the dance floor. I was I did it. And it was, we're done.
Did you have any dance experience whatsoever before?
I mean, I had moved, I'd done choreography. So, on tours before, but it was much more flick my leg over here, step, it was not dancing. I'd never danced without a violin before, for sure.
Oh, and that must have felt naked. You must have felt naked.
So naked. It was weird, for sure. I always was like, no, don't do anything open frame. Hold my arms.
You made such a huge impact, especially for me. Honestly, every time I watched your guys' routines, chills, down my body. And anything that you do, Lindsay.
Oh.
Did you request Mark Ballas as your partner?
I did. I did request Mark.
Why?
You know, actually, I didn't really know Mark before the season. I had reached out to Derek Huff and I was like, hey, I got asked to do Dancing with the Stars. You know, and I kind of asked him his advice.
How do you guys know each other first then?
So I met him at an event years ago and he mentioned to me, he's like, hey, if you ever need dancing in any one of your videos, like ballroom dancing, let me know. And like, I was like, I'm going to take you up on that. So anyways, I did. He came and we shot a music video together and we became like, you know, that back then it was just kind of like a, oh, we're kind of friends. And he's asked me since then, we've collaborated on so many projects together and he's become one of my like dear friends.
Great. You guys look so amazing together.
No, he's such a good friend and has been there for me in so many ways. But yeah, so I called him up and was just like, you know, I know you don't do the show anymore, but like, what advice do you have for me? And he first off was like, you need to call Dina Katz and ask for Mark Ballas. He's like, you need to make him your partner. He's like, you and Mark would jive together. And so glad he did. Like, I don't know. Mark and I are kind of the same person. You know what I mean? And our energy matched so well. And yes. I don't think I would have stayed sane through that extremely rigorous process of like everything we were doing if I hadn't had a partner that I could like laugh with, like fall on the floor laughing.
His English accents when he gets mad.
Yeah. When he gets frustrated and the English starts to come out and he starts to say funny words. And but yeah, just forever. We'll just love Mark so much. He was the best.
When you did Most Memorable Night, you dedicated it to your father, correct? If I remember. Yeah. That was so beautiful and so touching. Is there, was there another like story? Cause you know, sometimes when they ask you ahead of time, like what's your most memorable? And if two people have someone who passed, then maybe they'll say, yeah. Can you think of another one? Is it, what did you have of multiple like,
story of passing is more touching.
Did you have to pitch multiple stories or no?
I did pitch two stories. They were both with death.
Of course.
They're like, it's memorable. The death card.
The death card.
Yeah, she's got two. So, but they were both very different experiences with like loss. And one of them, I ended up choosing my dad because it was actually more recent. But the other one, I like realized, I was like, I don't think I'm ready to talk about this one.
Yeah.
And so I remember just thinking, yeah, we're going to talk about my dad, which, like I said, was only a few months, you know, it happened a few months earlier, I think like 7 months earlier.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the one I went with. And I've always loved that song that I chose.
It was so memorable. Like, honestly, it was definitely something that I look back and I'm like, yeah, that was the most memorable on Most Memorable Night.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you.
Did you feel like they portrayed you the way that you truly are behind it all? Like, cause I also think it's so powerful when they show the struggle.
Yeah.
With anyone.
I feel like, I felt like they showed my personality really well. Like mm-hmm. they made it so that I was like a likable character, which, you know.
Well, how can you not be likable, Lindsay?
You would hope that they would. But I do remember being very frustrated that they never would ever say anything about the fact that I did not know how to dance.
Oh.
So like the other contestants would sometimes call out me and, you know, on their packages and be like, well, I'm not a dancer like Lindsay, you know, or Jordan Fisher who are trained. And I would always be like, that's not fair. Like, I just would get so frustrated because the amount of work, I mean, everybody works hard, but maybe I'm biased, but I don't think anyone worked harder our season than me and Mark. Like I was always the last out of every, you know, because I just wanted so well. We are traveling, but like, you know, I don't know. So doing these challenging routines, it was like really difficult. And
it was.
I mean, it's difficult for everybody. So I don't mean to make myself.
But your
like,
routines were professional routines. I just want to be clear.
Well, thank you. Yeah, they were really hard. And so then to be called out as like a professional dancer on the show, I was like, oh. So I'd always get really frustrated. I was like, can they just share that like I've never been trained before and I'm working my ass off?
Why do they think you were trained? Because you did a music video with Derek?
I think so. Well, I think because I dance in my videos and I dance on stage, but it was more like I would like spin around and I'd lean and also
yes,
way
edited
better than,
too. It's like edit.
I was gonna say,
yeah,
I'm a fantastic editor. I edit my own music videos, and I was like, if you saw like my bumbling around, and I've gotten so much better. Actually, much thanks to the confidence that you know the training and the confidence the show gave me, and since like training afterwards. But back then, like it was all editing that made those videos look beautiful. And so people just assumed I was this dancer. And I'm like, I'm not. Like, I don't, I'm having a hard time not falling over every night. Like,
take me through a week of the process of Dancing with the Stars, like your schedule, from how you learn. Let's say, you know, he's like, okay, this week we've got the Viennese Waltz. Like, how long did it take you to really learn the choreography and the steps and all of it?
I feel like I would really enjoy the process until like Thursday, you know, like Monday through Thursday was.
Wait, when was there the live shows for you during that season?
We filmed on Mondays.
Okay.
So yeah, Monday. So I guess it was Friday. It was like Tuesday for Friday was kind of fun because you're just like, oh, and you're like excited about it and the music is fun and you're learning all the steps. And all of a sudden it gets real and like, you know, shit's hitting the fan because you're like, oh my gosh, I have to do this on TV. I will say, I think my quality on the show dipped dramatically once we were flying from the East Coast. You know, it's like those last few weeks, I just, you know, you can almost like see like the toll taking of like the flying and the traveling and the lack of sleep. It like really started to show those last few weeks when I'm like,
within you though, not within us. Like you just got better.
Oh, thank you. It's nice that it looked that way from the outside. Inside, yeah. I think we both felt like shells of humans.
Right.
I remember like, one time we were on a plane flying back to camera blocking and we were, you know, it was like, I think the week of the finale. And Mark kind of woke up as a woman was standing over us taking our picture as we're sleeping on the plane. Like, he got so mad. I'd never seen him quite this mad. I mean, he wasn't like, he was just like, hey, give me that phone. And he deleted it. And he was like, don't be rude.
Good for him.
I know, good for him.
Him and Derek get so mad at that stuff. They really do. Right. And by the way, as they should. It's really rude.
Especially because they're so sweet. They'll take a picture with anybody.
Just ask.
Like, if anybody asks and is polite, but to disrespect and like be like kind of weird and like creepy about it, it's like, no, no, no.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you on our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun. And I can't wait for you to hear it.
Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How involved were you in the collaboration of like the creative and all of it?
I mean, Mark is a genius and that was his world. Like normally in my stuff, I'm like the motor. I'm the, you know, I think of all the ideas for the music video, for the tour and stuff. But in this arena, like I gave ideas and we used some of them, but like it was really fun for once to kind of like, I don't know, take a little bit of a back seat in that spot.
Oh, okay.
And also I was planning my own tour. Oh, and I had an album that came out during that time. So I was like, I kind of was creatively like,
gosh.
And so I was like, you plan, and his ideas were always so good. So yeah, I mean, I think we really collaborated hard on the freestyle, obviously. But yeah, most of the ideas, I have to give credit to Mark.
Wow.
I think the reason usually I'm so like, I need to be the creative drive of everything is because I usually like my ideas the best. But when Mark would tell me an idea, I was like, that is so fun. Okay, we're going to be in pajamas and we're going to start on a bed that looks like we're laying down. That's brilliant. I'm like, you win. Like, take it. And I'm never too proud to be like, that, you know, like that's a better idea than maybe what I had. But it's like I said, I wanted to dance in pajamas for the Guilty Pleasure Week. So it's like I would be involved with like some of the ideas. But then, you know, he would take them and make them.
I totally remember that. It's so memorable.
So clever.
Did you ever feel like, I guess, at a crossroads with the judges at all? Did they ever like, did they give you constructive criticism or like how was your experience with them?
You know, I was like the judges. Like, I think they, you know, sometimes they said things I was like, I disagree with, or,
like,
you know,
what?
I'm trying to remember. There was just certain weeks. what was it? I mean, it wasn't my best dance, but they hated my samba. And I was
really?
Like, oh,
samba's
like,
hard though.
I was like, it wasn't that bad. Like, you know, Frankie's couldn't have been better and you loved his. Like, you know, I'm just kidding. Love Frankie.
No, totally.
You know
I get
mean?
It though.
You're just like, sometimes I felt like they were a little extra hard on me again, because I just think they looked at me like I was a dancer and not like I'm like struggling back here, you know, to like get this together. So I just felt like they held me to a different caliber, which, you know, I'm honored that they, you know, kind of put me up there. But yeah, because they were very, very specific and pretty like, you know, they always be like, we know you can do better. And I'd be like, I don't know if I can.
But how come? So were you able to express this in your master interviews? Like say, or did they just not use it?
Yeah, I did. I said it every week. And like, because, you know, they ask you the questions. And I remember I'd try to slide in there, you know, because I'm not a dancer. I've never taken dance training ever. And they would just never put it in.
That is so frustrating. I totally get it. Like, it's also frustrating. I can relate in a different way when there's like one little tiny argument during rehearsal and they're like, that's all they use. Like, it took 2 minutes out of all of the footage that you have for rehearsal.
Right.
I mean, even back, this was like back in season 4, they were like, can you reenact you leaving the, can you go out again? And I'm like, you guys.
Like, you want me to storm out? We've
so you want me to slam, you want me to slam easily. The door again? Or like, can't you guys do this? Oh. Or like, it's also television, right? Like, so at the end
right.
of the day, but like Jordan was a dancer.
Oh, he was. That was another frustrating thing, is because they would put me and Jordan in the same category.
I think the results would have changed if they just told your story.
You know, but.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah. So I was just, you know, I'm, of course, I was like, I was really bummed that I didn't win. I wanted it so badly
really?
For Mark too, because it was so, it was going to be his last season. I think he went back for another shot because we
a few times.
He's like, I really wanted to end on top. Now I have to go back. So, you know, for him, I was like, I really wanted to win. But also all that work you put in, you forget that anything else exists. Like, my managers were literally like, Lindsay, don't, like, I know this is important to you, but you have a tour that you have to get ready for, you know? And I was like, right. That's my career. This is not okay. Like, you get
right.
so
consumed
sucked into it and consumed by it. So yeah, of course I really wanted to win. I was very disappointed, but I kept reminding myself that, hey, you know what? more than anything, I wanted to have the full experience. I wanted to make it all the way to the end. I didn't want to get cut early. And I was like, I didn't get cut from anything. Like I got the whole enchilada and I got to experience it on such a magical level. And like, the only thing that would have been different if I won is that I'd have a mirror ball somewhere in my house. That's the only thing that would be different. And so I was like,
that you can buy on eBay, I promise.
Actually, I might go find one.
When you say it was so hard for you, what was so hard for you to learn ballroom exactly? Like what was the process like for you?
I mean, it's the intense amount of memory that you have to have and body coordination, which I had learned some choreography before. So it was like, it would start to happen naturally, but then through the week, as you're realizing this is, 90 seconds of really fast movements, so trying to cram all that into your brain. I think also just, it was the finesse. It was one thing to like step through the movements, but like, because I'm not a dancer, Mark had to tell me like the things you were talking about that you just would like, you'd rather feel and express rather than it's like every hand he would be like, turn it like this, put it like that. That's the shape.
The devil's in the detail. Yes.
Or like my leg, he was constantly like, turn out that foot. And then we'd practice like me kicking my leg up with the foot turned out, like we'd practice like those things that should be muscle memory. And they are to me now because I learned and I was like, I'm going to keep this with me. And I've now like really finessed a lot of it, but like, especially the arm stuff. I was like, everything had to be taught of like what angle, where to like put your head up, all of it. It was not natural at all. But
did you ever feel insecure during a live show or did you always know your stuff?
I think one of the things that makes Dancing with the Stars so cool is that it takes people who are very secure in their craft or their art or their profession. Like these are professionals that are competent and you throw them in ballroom shoes and it automatically, is going to make you insecure. And I think that's what makes people so raw and real and vulnerable in that show. And that's why people connect with these humans is because not only is the dancing fun and you get to see them progress, but you get to see someone who's like kind of terrified that normally in most of their life isn't terrified, like they're very used to being good at their thing. And so I think that, I was usually insecure as I walked out there, but at the same time, I'm also a performer. Mm-hmm. And even if I wasn't a dancer, I know how to like have stage presence. I know how to like turn on that little like light inside that's like, all right, time to shine. And I think being a musician too, you connect with music. Mm-hmm. And so as long as I could connect with the song, it's like I could be expressive.
Did Shirley and Corky help at all?
Yes, Shirley. Well, actually, both of them like stopped in a few times and like said hi. The first time I met Shirley Ballas, it was so funny. She walks in and she walks up to me and she sticks her hand out and introduces herself. I'm Shirley Ballas. And I, took her hand to shake it and she didn't let go. She like then leaned back, looked me up and down,
sized
me
up. Oh my goodness.
And then she leaned forward and she goes, well, we're a little pigeon-toed, but we can work with that.
Oh my goodness. Typical Shirley Ballas. You gotta love her. Doesn't hold so back. But you weren't even dancing. You were shaking her hand.
I was just standing, but I guess my feet were slightly turned in. So she's like, oh, we're a little pigeon-toed, but it's okay. We'll work with that. And I had like just met Mark. So I didn't even have him to like fall back on to be like, is this okay? Like, it was just like, ha, ha.
Did she? I know you do a great impression. Did she like learn, teach you rumba walks or what was the first thing that she taught you?
Yeah, she told Mark, like, you just go. And she just, like, worked with me on, like, some Latin-type stuff, like, helping me kind of know how to, like, rumble walks and, like, the
figure eights. And,
all those things.
Good so times. Funny.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024. And we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time. We hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, rapid fire, girl. I know you're so busy. Okay, there's 2 different little sections here. We're going to just do a regular Dancing with the Stars one, then we're doing a Derek Huff versus Mark Ballas edition. Okay, this is all fun.
No.
It's all fun. No, it's not crazy, I promise. Okay, who falls in love first, the celebrity or the dancer?
Oh, the celebrity.
What's something viewers would be surprised to learn that happens off camera on Dancing?
I think the insane amount of interviews and how often you get stopped to like talk about something that you're like exhausted. You're like, really? Really? You're going to make me talk about this? But, yeah.
And the spray tans, right? That's definitely not on camera.
Oh, I miss that.
I know. You should see my bottom half. It is. I didn't even realize I could be this white. Anyway, who was the biggest prankster backstage during your season?
Oh, Sasha Faber.
What was your go-to snack during long rehearsal days?
Ooh. Honestly, peanut butter.
Yum. Yes, for sure. It gave you energy.
I bring a jar of peanut butter with me.
I love it. How did the cast unwind after a live show?
Disperse. It was like, it was gone. Like the show ends and people were just like, it was like ants if the light comes, or cockroaches if the light comes on.
Yes, yes. Oh yeah. Because I think for me at least, I was gone to the studio to try and choreograph if we made it through the next round. It's crazy. Was there a moment you felt like the cameras missed that you wish that they had captured? I think you mentioned that already. What's the most unexpected thing a camera or microphone caught you saying or doing during rehearsals?
This is longer than a rapid fire.
It's
answer,
okay.
But do you want it?
Yes.
Okay. I've never told this story because they deleted the tape.
Huh? What happened, Lindsay?
So, oh my gosh. Okay.
Wait,
so
meaning the producers deleted it?
Or the Mark? Camera guy,
okay.
On purpose deleted it.
Tell me.
Because it was so embarrassing. but it's fine. I can talk about it now. But in the moment. Okay. So rehearsing, and it was rehearsing for our finale. And I started on Mark's shoulders in the finale. And then I would like, he'd like kind of spin me and I'd literally like wrap my legs around and slide down his body. And then we'd go into the routine. And so anyways, we did that. We made it through the whole routine. And then I like turn and look at him and he starts talking through like, okay, we need to tighten up this. We need to tighten up that. And my eyes got so wide as I looked at him, and I realized that I was on my period, and I had completely bled through, and across his shoulder and across his body was a smear of
Lindsay.
And I didn't know what to say, and Lindsay. I just stared at him wide-eyed, and I just said, I have to go. And I ran out of that room and ran into the bathroom. And like, cause you know, the rehearsals are so long. You're so sweaty. I had lost track of time.
Of course.
Anyway. So then after I'd like kind of cleaned myself up and I'd been in there for a while to do so, I come back in like, just like, I almost left. I was like, can I just go? And I was like, no, I can't.
Wait, did Mark know?
Oh, well, so by the time I walk back in, there's mirrors everywhere. So they'd figured it out. Obviously.
Oh my and God, Lindsay.
I walk in and Mark's wearing a different shirt. He's changed.
Oh my God.
And the camera guy, I looked at him and I was like, I'm so sorry. And then I look at the camera guy and he's like, I deleted the tape.
Oh, that's so nice of him.
So nice of him.
Oh my gosh.
You never know how far somebody's going to go on a day in the editing room when
you're right.
Your package is boring and they're like, well, this is.
Well, I don't think that Disney would allow for this, but like,
I don't think so.
You never know. Sometimes I sometimes wonder, like, these people, like some of these costumes, I'm like, wait a second, what?
Yeah.
Wow, Lindsay. Mark for sure. Like, Mark, first of all, I've never heard this story. So like, you know, Mark's like, he loves you, you know, he would never.
Well, he even said, he's like, Lindsay, I don't care. He's like, I've been peed on. I've been spit on. He's like, I've everything. He's like, I don't care. It's fine. And I was like, oh, practically crying. I was so mortified.
Oh my
and
God.
Looking back at it now, it's just funny. It's actually the best period story I've ever heard.
Thank you for sharing. I'm going to snap it out with you. We're snapping it out. Thank you so much for being so vulnerable. Oh my goodness. What a great story though. Seriously. Like, right? What a great story.
In
all realms. Like, okay. Okay. How would you and Mark resolve disagreements during practice, or did you ever disagree?
Oh, we did for sure. I mean, not a ton, but of course you're going to.
Well, you must have been tired too. Like, you must have just been like over it.
Get tired. And well, a lot of times it was like, I think it's fine. And he's like, no, it's not. It needs to be better. Or, you know, like, this isn't like, this move isn't working. But I'm like, well, I've already learned it. So we're going to keep it, you know? And he's like, well, it's not working. It doesn't look good. And, you know.
And that's in his English accent, right?
You know, by this time he's full British. Those were usually what it was when it was like, I can't relearn that section. I can't do a new one. And he's like, we have to fix it. You know, that was usually.
That would be like on Sunday camp. Cause I know that him and Derek do this a lot. Oh, yes, I could never do this.
It's like on Sunday night. And you're like, I've spent a week, like, you have no idea, like visualizing, practicing, like sleeping it. Like if you change it, I just might not get it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it works for them, but like, I could never do that to my partner, especially even in ones with maybe a little dance experience. Still, it's like you're risking, but I guess, you know, no risk, no reward. You know, they're really good at what they do.
Yeah.
What was the first impression you had of Mark Ballas versus Derek Hough?
Well, Derek was in a situation where, like, you know, it wasn't Dancing with the Stars, You're My New Partner. So I remember just being very like, kind of, that's Derek Hough. And it was an event where there was music and he grabbed my hand and started like spinning me and dancing. And I was just like terrified. I was like, I don't know what to do. So yeah, I was much more like stiff and awkward when I met Derek than when I met Mark. It was like, you're going to be my new best friend.
Love it. How can you describe a typical rehearsal day with Mark compared to one with Derek?
You know, they are so similar. I will say I laughed so much with Mark. We just have the same sense of humor and he's so funny. With Derek, I love watching how fast his brain works, so fast that his mouth can't keep up. You know what I mean? He'll have an idea and he just starts to like almost stutter because he can't keep up with, his mind is racing so fast.
What's one word you would use to describe Mark's teaching style, and same for Derek? What's Mark's teaching style like in one word?
I feel like balance is a great word for Mark. Wow. I feel like he's so good at balancing being like tough, but also being very like loving and kind and supportive and like, you know, and making sure it's fun. So like, I think Mark is so balanced.
Derek?
Derek, I'm like, I didn't ever train with Derek, only like music videos.
So how long would it take for you guys to figure that? Because like, I mean, it's, there's so many different layers, right, to the music video. I mean, you did train with him. I thought I saw this like how to, I stalked you for the last few weeks. I thought I saw this like, come with me to get ready for this video. Then you and Derek did train in dance studios and stuff, you said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So usually it's like the way I would work with Derek, because it was a music video, it was much more like, let's do like something like this over here and then we'll cut. And then, you know, so it was,
okay.
It was so much more like, it was way less stressful because it's like, then we'll cut, then we'll do this that you could never actually get to from that place. But we know that we're going to have a,
it's not a live. Cut. Yeah.
It's not live. So that's another thing when people are like, well, you've worked with Derek before. I'm like, with an edit, like with a highly curated, like we would do one move and then we'd do the next move. So working with Derek was very casual, you know.
Like, what did you learn the most from each of them? I guess one thing.
I don't know. It was so inspiring to see someone who has made their own path so specifically. And it was like, I was kind of in the middle of that process myself of making a very specific niche path. I'm a violinist that dances and, you know, perform shows. And that's very not traditional. And so to see like, a ballroom dancer who's like really carved his own path and has been so creative with it and made multiple paths through his career. It was just really inspiring to like see that in him and be like, okay, like, you know, I'm not alone in this crazy world. And also he's doing it really well. I'm going to take a page out of the book. And Mark, oh gosh, I learned so much from Mark. Mark is just one of the, like the kindest people. Like I know, and I, maybe he wouldn't be flattered by that answer because it's not as like sparkly as maybe some other answers I could give. But like, I don't know. I just think that when you're in such a harsh environment as like a live TV show and there's so much at stake and his reputation is at stake, and to like constantly end everything with kindness and, you know, on top of his incredible talent and like vision, he's so creative. I don't think I'd ever worked with anybody that gave me a run for my money creatively that like I felt created in the same, not like I'm the most creative person in the world, but just that could, you know, have the same
you're
type
pretty
of creativity.
Creative, Lindsay.
Oh, well, thank you. But I just was like, wow, like I feel like I found someone who can keep up with me creatively. But I think more than anything, he's so kind and always made me feel, no matter how discouraged I was, that like, that I was good enough to get out there.
What is one thing that you learned from the show? One takeaway?
Oh, from the show? I think the biggest takeaway is like, in a very real sense, keep going when you don't think you can go anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like I've never been that tired. Like I also displaced a rib on the show. Like
what?
Halfway through the season in my Paso Doble.
Did you talk about it? Rib.
They did talk about that one.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they got that. But for the rest of the season, I was in a lot of pain and I was injured. And just that thought of like, you gotta get up. I know you're tired, but you gotta get up. And, you know, and like, sometimes it's amazing to look back on moments like that, especially because that was like a 3 month long moment of like, I am so tired, but I gotta get up. It's like those moments that you can like look back on and be like, I did that. I can get up right now. I can get up and do it. You know, I can keep going. So I'm very grateful for that experience.
What's next for you? You're going on another tour, I see.
Yes, going on another tour. Super excited. I'm so grateful that I'm still excited about touring because
I have to come see you because it's a North American tour, right?
Yes, please come. We're coming. We're playing at the Greek in September.
I'll come.
So yeah.
I'll be there.
Okay. We'll hook you up.
Yes, we will.
But yeah, I'm so grateful that I'm still excited. Like I've toured for so long, and yet I still get really excited about the like the creative process. And we're starting to like we're gonna rehearse soon, and I've been planning it for months, and like you know, doing all the things, and it's so fun to do it. And I'm just grateful that I still love it. And also, I have an album coming out in June. So,
and how's your personal life?
You know. My personal life, it's funny. It's not where I ever would have thought it would be at this point in my life. Like, you know, I had this thought recently where I was like, oh my gosh, like 20-year-old Lindsay, like I went to college to get married. I wanted to meet the man of my dreams. And that's pretty much why I was motivated to go to college. Oh. And it was always what I thought was like the most important thing was to get married and be chosen, like have a partner, you know, and have a family. Like that's what you do. And so I think if 20-year-old me could see the future and I realize that I am still not married and I'm 37, I would have been like that would have been my worst fear. And it's a really beautiful thing that I'm here and I'm very single right now. for the better. You know, I was in a really, I came out of a not good situation last year, done all the work, and I feel great about myself, and I love myself truly, most of the time, you know, and I'm like, wow, I'm living very gracefully what was once my worst fear, and I face it every day, and I know that I'm still worth something just because, you know, even though someone didn't choose me, like that's not what's most important. So it's been a process to like get to this point, but honestly, only in the last like year have I truly gotten to a point where I'm like, of course I still want that, but I honestly, I don't need it. And I actually believe that for the first time.
You really don't. And girl, I am with you. I'm turning 40. I am single. I am alone, not lonely. And I freaking love myself. Like, and I'm learning to, not always, but like, we are just like a work in progress. And I'm so much less drama. I've been married. You know what? We have to change the vocabulary. It's not about someone choosing us. It's like, who are we choosing ourselves?
100%. It's
right. It's for real. Yeah. Let's like, for me, real. I need to retrain my brain and be a better chooser or picker, because like, this ain't working. Yeah. My pattern was not working.
Yeah. Same. I love that. And also I, like you're saying, I want to change the narrative that women feel that they're supposed to be, because we only believe that because society for, you know, centuries, it used to be because we had to survive. Like literally you wanted a partner because that was how you survived. We don't need that anymore. We thrive and
we need to get out of the Renaissance days. Like, let's move on.
Yeah, let's go.
More power to you. I'm so proud of you, and I'm so happy you got out of whatever you were in. And I'm just like, let's keep in touch. I love you. Thank you for being and doing this, and just for being you. So, where can people find you?
You can find me all places people can be found, you know,
on Instagram. It's just, and YouTube. What's your YouTube handle?
It's all just Lindsay Sterling.
At Lindsay Sterling. Okay. I love you so much. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much to Lindsay for coming on the podcast, for being so open and vulnerable. Make sure you guys check out her website. We'll put the information below if you want to check her out when she's on tour. And I just want to thank you guys for listening. And, you know, since you guys have been loving the podcast so much, especially when I do recaps of past seasons, we decided to make it a series. So make sure to not only listen every Mondays for the interview portion, but now you can look forward to listening to an all new rewatch recap series here on Sex, Lies, and Spray Tans every single Wednesdays, along with another weekly episode of Headlines and Hot Topics. That's three full episodes of Sex, Lies, and Spray Tans that drop every single week. So make sure to listen so you can get your fix of all things DWTS related, rate, review, all the things. Love you guys so much. And until next time.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.